great to have all of you here in Washington, D.C. This is an important time, obviously, for agriculture, obviously in South Dakota, but across the country. We're in the throes of a new farm bill. There's a lot going on, a lot of discussion right now about trade, a lot of discussion about the RFS for those of that have corn state representation. So it's a very busy time, but a time in which it's important for us to get it right because of the economic circumstances we find ourselves in agriculture. South Dakota's number one industry is agriculture, and so we pay very close attention to it. As Michelle said, in our state, if you take your eye off the ball when it comes to agriculture, you're not going to be around very long because it just impacts in so many ways our entire economy. And I think that in terms of the national economy, I've always argued, too, that when agriculture is doing well, the national economy does well, too. But if you look at the last few years now, we're going into what they say is going to be the fifth year of low prices, historically low prices. Net farm income last year was half of what it was 4 years ago. Every year, net farm income continues to go down, and we've seen historic drops in net farm income. So it's tough out on the farm these days. I've met in the last couple of weeks with a lot of lenders, too, who are very concerned about the stress that they see on the balance sheets of a lot of their borrowers. And so it's just a time when we need a good farm bill, make sure that safety net is in place, and make sure that our policies are conducive to growing and expanding market opportunities for American agriculture. And it's hard, as you know, because especially, and I served here in the House for three terms. I served on this committee, and the first farm bill I was involved with was over here, and then eventually we ended up over in the Senate, and this will be my fourth farm bill now. So we've kind of been down this path a few times, but in the House of Representatives in particular, you don't get a farm bill out unless you deal with some of the issues that impact states that really don't have a lot of production agriculture. And that means that the nutrition title, which many of us would like to see modified and amended and improved and made more efficient, is a particular provision in the bill that most of the House members, if you're going to get them to vote for a farm bill, have to have in there. And, there was an attempt, as you know, last time, I think, here in the House at least, to try and separate, bifurcate the nutrition title from the other elements of the farm bill. And as it turned out, you couldn't pass a farm bill. So you have to, there's got to be some give and take, and is typically the case in farm bills, too. It's a lot more about regional considerations in most cases than it really is about partisan considerations. And generally speaking, Republicans and Democrats, if you represent an agricultural state, the farmers and ranchers and agriculture across this country really don't care about party line politics. They really care about getting results. And so typically what happens in a farm bill is we find ourselves, the disputes and the divisions and the differences tend to be more along regional lines. And I don't think that'll be, there won't be an exception to that this year. I think that'll be the case again in this farm bill. But as we move forward, it is important that we try and convince as many people as we can to get a big bipartisan vote on farm bills. And in the Senate, it takes 60 votes to do anything consequential. It'll take 60 votes to pass this farm bill. So even if there's a bill that emerges from the House that has provisions in it that the House really likes, sometimes it's it'll get shaped a little bit as it moves through the Senate. And ultimately, my guess is we'll end up in a conference committee, which is generally what happens, and then try and reconcile the differences between the two bills and get something we can put on the President's desk before the current bill expires, which is September 30th. And that's my goal. I still believe profoundly that we can complete this farm bill this year and not have to go through the process of getting an extension. I've been down that road. We've done that in past farm bills. It doesn't work very well. And there are a lot of provisions in this farm bill that need to be updated and modernized to reflect what's happening in the ag economy. And so as we move through the process of finalizing a bill here in the House and the Senate, my hope and expectation is that we will get a new bill on the President's desk before the end of the fiscal year on September 30th. In terms of the elements of the bill, we've been very involved as the Senate has started to consider this in putting some ideas out there. Today we are dropping my 10th bill. provision. These are all bills that are designed to be incorporated into the final farm bill. This one has to deal with the commodity title, the ARC program in particular, which was the program of choice for most of the growers in our part of the country that raise wheat and corn and beans. And it's not effective today because of the price circumstances that we're in. So we've got to look at how we can modify that farm or that particular program and make it work in today's agriculture. And so we've made some changes in it or proposed some changes in it, which we hope we can get adopted in the Senate version of the bill. They didn't have any of these in the House bill. The House bill relies exclusively in the commodity title of the bill on the PLC program, which uses a reference price, provides price protection. But the thing about the ARC program that many of our growers like is it provides not just price protection but revenue protection. And so if you have production losses in tough years, then it also allows for provides some safety net protection against that. So as we look at the Farm Bill, of course, crop insurance, number one. Everybody wants a good crop insurance program. That's been really the cornerstone of our farm policy now for the past several Farm Bills. And it works way better, believe me, than it did when I was over here in the House and we didn't have a good crop insurance program. We ended up doing these ad hoc emergency disaster programs every few years, and those were, multi-billion dollar programs. Crop insurance allows farmers with some help, but to buy a coverage plan that works for them and that provides that baseline protection in a bad year. And then you couple that, complement it with some of the commodity Title I safety net provisions that we have in the bill, and I think it works pretty well. So we've got some ideas on the commodity title that we think improve and strengthen it, and actually some that save some money. And clearly, obviously, that's going to be an issue too, is how you pay for all this stuff. And anytime you can find savings within one program of the bill that you can use to offset some of the things you're trying to do elsewhere, it's a win. So we've got some ideas that actually save some dollars that we can plow back into some of the things that we need to do. Conservation title, we've had a number of ideas that we put out there, including increasing the CRP acreage up to 30 million. The House came out at 29. We also want to provide more flexibility in that program. One of the things that we've dealt with and all the time I've been in office is you get a dry year and then we're, pleading with USDA to allow for emergency hay and grazing. You got in the CRP program these mid-contract management practices that to me have never made sense, why you would destroy your entire field when that could be harvested and used and put to some productive use. And so some of the flexibility that we allow for in our proposal would completely do away with emergency hay and grazing and completely do away with mid-contract management practices. So you'd basically, any given year, you could take a third of your acres on a rotational basis and hay or graze those lands. So we think it makes sense. It's something that farmers have been requesting for a long time. We've worked with the conservation community, with Pheasants Forever and Ducks Unlimited and Wildlife Federation, the conservation groups, all of whom have signed off on these ideas, and so we're hoping to get them incorporated. And then we've got another proposal, which has actually gotten some pretty positive feedback, called the SHIP program, Soil Health and Income Protection Program, which is a shorter term in duration sort of set-aside program that's voluntary, in which a farmer could take the 10 or 15% of his lowest yielding acres and put them into this program for 3 to 5 years and receive a partial payment, CRP payment, half of a CRP payment, plus a reduction in their crop insurance premiums in exchange for putting it aside. And the rationale for that is that one of the complaints that we've consistently heard about the CRP program is that it locks up land for too long, 10 to 15 years. This is a shorter program in duration. It is voluntary. To get into CRP, you have to meet the eligibility requirements. And tell you what, in the last sign-up, we got nothing out of it in South Dakota, which makes no sense to me or to anybody else that follows this program. So we think this is an idea that could complement and be an alternative for people who want to set aside some ground for a shorter period of time on a voluntary basis and get some economic incentive to do that. So that's a provision that we have in the conservation title that we propose. We've had some forest health, the forestry title ideas that we've got out there, increasing the categorical exclusion that can be used for treatment and management of our forests, and a number of other which we think are just common sense management changes that improve the forestry title of the bill. In livestock, we've made some modifications in the 2008 Farm Bill, I worked with Max Baucus from Montana at the time to get a permanent disaster title in the bill, and that has served at least South Dakota and I think a lot of other states really well these past few years. A lot of payments have gone out when you had some of the disasters that we've experienced, but it needs to be refined and fine-tuned. And of course, one of the things that we were able to get USDA to agree to yesterday, which is also something that's one of our legislative proposals, was if you can get certified by a veterinarian that these livestock losses were due to the weather event, then you are eligible for payment, which has not been the case in the past, or it's been difficult for our producers to work that program. So we've got some ideas in the livestock or in the disaster title of the program or of the bill as well that we're putting forward. So those are just kind of a thumbnail sketch of the farm bill. And timing wise, I hope we mark it up in May. You know, we'll be behind the House a little bit, but not too far. We've been having conversations at the member level and at the staff level now for several weeks, and a number of hearings. I think perhaps for some of you have covered those, as you know, for several months now. And so I think we're in a place where we're ready to move forward. And I'm, again, hoping for a good, strong bill that enables production agriculture in this country to continue to do what they do best, and that's feed our country and feed the world. And obviously, we also are very interested in what's happening in the discussions about trade. So, I'd be happy to. Yes, sir.
Senator, how do you amend with the Olympic average the ARC program that is effective for farmers as a safety net, that doesn't affect planting, and that you can afford with the budget that you have?
Yeah, well, there are a couple of different things, changes that we make. And one is it's a 5-year rolling average, so we go to a 10. And we also make some adjustments. It's based on average county loss, and so we adjust that from 14% above county average loss down to 10%. There are a couple of other things that we do too to tweak it, but mainly it has to do with, you know, what data you're pulling from past, and obviously the 5-year average is not working today. So that's one of the, I guess, principal changes that we make. And there are, I think at least right now, a number of farm organizations that are coming out supporting that, National Corn Growers, of course, and we are working with some of the others as well. And I think some of the state organizations, too, that in states where the ARC program has been the preferred alternative, you know, that's the take-up rate on that in South Dakota was 90%. So, and we think we need to have an alternative to the PLC program, which works well in other places of the country, but generally a revenue-based program works pretty well for us. Yes, ma'am. Well, I mean, I think that, you know, it's going to be a farm-by-farm decision, but you have a lot of ground in South Dakota that our producers crop that doesn't do very well. And it would make sense, I think, in some cases for them to be able to put it into a program where they're putting native grasses in and then getting some partial compensation for that. I mean, it wouldn't be a full CRP payment, be a partial CRP payment, and then you get a break on your crop insurance premium. But we have heard, and obviously I will tell you that a lot of these ideas come from input that we've gotten from our producers and from the commodity groups that we work with. We've listened a lot over the past few years to try and figure out what works and what doesn't work. And we fashioned this in response to some of that. And when we put the idea out there, it's gotten a lot of good feedback. I mean, I think we have had a number of producers in South Dakota that I think would be interested in that, simply because in some cases, you know, depending on what's happening with prices and what they think is going to happen with prices, they don't want to lock it up for 10 to 15 years. So a 3 to 5 year program that is voluntary is something that we think ought to be an option. Now, whether they choose to use it or not remains to be seen, but I think a lot of that will depend on what happens in the market in the days ahead. And really, frankly, you know, if you've got ground that doesn't produce well, and it might make some sense, economic sense for them to do that. Yes, sir.
Senator, you've been pretty active on the CRP front, but as I'm sure you know, the House Farm Bill pulled CSP into EQIP. I'm wondering how you anticipate
Well, we could. I think there are more defenders of CSP, I would say, in the Senate than there are in the House. But the EQIP program, the CSP program, could, you know, depending again on what that looks like. And I guess I haven't socialized that idea with my colleagues on the Senate Ag Committee, but sometimes it makes sense just to sort of consolidate programs and to create more efficiencies. And these are both work. EQIP and CSP are both working lands programs. EQIP is used extensively in western South Dakota and other places by livestock producers. And CSP is. I think we authorized that. Was it in 2 or 8, Lynn? Was it 2000? Was that the 2 farm bill? Was it 8? Okay, yeah. It was a, and it's kind of had fits and starts, and it's kind of had a mixed, I think, experience. But so we're willing to look at that, and I don't think we've made any final judgments about what the House has proposed. But again, it really comes down to what you have the votes for in the Senate. And CSP program was one that was put forward by Tom Harkin, I think, at the time, and so it enjoys more support among some of the Senate members of the Ag Committee than it probably does over here. Michelle.
John, can you talk about the tariff situation with China? The president says short-term pain, long-term gain. I mean, do you really believe that? And if we have a compensation program, what would it look like, and would you support it?
Yeah, I've been really reluctant to come out in support of any kind of a market loss adjustment or price loss program. We had some experience with that in the late 90s. It was expensive. And I just don't think it makes sense when, you know, most of our farmers, and our farmers don't want it. Our farmers don't want another program like that. They want a market. And I think that the focus of our policymakers and the administration needs to be opening markets. And so what I've tried to convey to the administration and to the president himself when we were down there a couple of weeks ago is that our farmers really don't want to go down that path. What they want, and this is what I suggested, and I said, if you really want to send a message to China, if you want to pressure China, get back into TPP, which got a couple days of sort of seemed like positive consideration before it got walked back by the administration. And their argument is that we need bilateral trade agreements, you know, and my response is, then where are they? I mean, we're not seeing any evidence that the administration is moving forward with any bilateral deals. If they were, you know, I'd be a lot more inclined to cut them some slack on on pulling out of TPP and deciding not to get back into it. But, they said, well, it wasn't a good enough deal, and frankly, maybe it could have been better. But the truth is that TPP was negotiated by the Obama administration on authority given him by a Republican Congress. Republican House and Republican Senate gave him trade promotion authority to negotiate that. So you could argue he could have negotiated a better deal, but you know, for example, on beef into Japan, 38% tariff today, it would have been down to 9. That would have opened up a lot of opportunity for our livestock producers here in America. So I guess I'm really reluctant to go down that path. They've talked about it. Secretary Perdue has talked about it, but I will tell you that when we were at that meeting at the White House and the president threw out this idea of taking revenues from these tariffs and using that to make, you know, basically payments to farmers to offset what they're losing in terms of markets, there was a collective groan from everybody in the room, and this is mostly Midwestern senators. So there is very little support among senators who represent agricultural states for this, and based on the feedback we're getting, very little support among farmers or commodity organizations. I just don't think they want to go down that path. They want to market their product. They want to, as Pat Roberts called it, they want trade, not aid. So, yes, sir. That's a good question. I'm not sure I'm the one to answer that. I think, you know, it's ultimately it's a decision between himself and the president. He serves at the pleasure of the president. But I do think on these hardship waivers, he has really, he's really hurt the RFS. And the RFS is the law of the land. And so, you know, most of us who represent corn-producing states are very, I guess I would say, wary of the EPA and what their long-term intentions are. We've tried to work with the Department of Agriculture, with Secretary Perdue, and make sure that he is advocating for farmers in these discussions at the White House with the EPA. But based on what we've seen here of late and in our experience in dealing with Scott Pruitt and the EPA, we have serious questions about whether or not they are serious about enforcing the law. And so I think these hardship waivers, they're there for a reason. They're to be used on a limited basis where there truly is economic hardship. But there are a couple of examples here of late that where you'd have to, they just don't pass the smell test. So, I guess his ability to continue in the job is really going to be up to him and the president. But I'll tell you, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, this stuff just keeps coming out every day, and I would think it's going to get harder and harder probably for him to be effective in the job. Yes, ma'am.
You're a hard driver from the data network in Forks, North Dakota. I have a follow-up to Rusty's question, actually. He said a few other examples, or I guess there are a few other serious questions that you had about Pruitt being able to do the job. Can you share what some of those?
Well, most of mine are revolve around the way he's handled this RFS issue. And, I've been in a number of meetings with him, along with other senators, where he's expressed his commitment to the RFS. And then sort of seems like systematically goes about the process of trying to undo it. And, that starts, it's hardship waivers for one, but it's also, the RINs cap. They've had a whole series of proposals that I think are very detrimental to not only the present, but the future of the IRS or the RFS. And so most of the concerns I have are around that. I mean, there are other policies where I agree with him. Many of the things that he's doing at the EPA, I think, have lessened the regulatory burden and the cost of doing business for agriculture. And so there are some good things that are happening there in terms of policy. But everything that's happened around the RFS, and and being reluctant to move to year-round E15 sales too, they can't continue to talk about that in a positive way, but we haven't seen again any evidence that's happening, or at least imminent. And so I'm hoping that will. The president was pretty vocal about that at the meeting at the White House a couple of weeks ago, in response to some questions from some of us, but the EPA seems to be resisting for whatever reason. So we'll see again where that all ends up. But anyway, thank you all very much. Great to be with you. Yep.